Welcome to episode 24 of the Chat New England podcast. Broadcasting here on a nice Saturday morning. I am Nick LaRocque, and as always, I am joined by my good friend Ben Babcock. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you getting up early today. Usually when we do the podcast, it's late for me here. It's the evening for you there. Today, we are mixing up a little bit with the weekend morning, which is – it's kind of nice, don't you think? Good way to start the day?
It is. It's there's always the risk with a Saturday. I think Saturday in particular that you'll sort of sleep in and, you know, lounge around a little bit. And, you know, the day is sort of wasted before you know it hit you. And I've already been – out of the apartment. I've had a bagel. I've got a
fresh air. It's good.
Yeah, I got a mug of coffee here right in front of me, and and a nice sheet of notes here. So I'm ready to go. But before we start, we should just say we've been spending all week trying to come up with a new name for our podcast. You know, Chat New England podcast is nice. It rolls off the tongue pretty well, but we really talk about a lot of different things that are not specific to New England. You know, especially me being a Giants fan.
Right.
And it's not all the sports, you know, certainly we're not going to be talking baseball on here. We rarely talk hockey. So if any fans out there have any suggestions, you know, we like to talk NFL, we like to talk NBA, you know, we like to talk Kardashian family. We're looking for something that combines those things with, you know, chicken wings, sweatpants, barbecue. We just haven't found the right thing.
All the accoutrements of our particular lifestyles, I think, you know. And our fans know us about as well as anybody, I would say. So we'll be open to suggestions, you know. Email us, hit us on Twitter. That's what the kids are doing these days.
That's right.
It just we put that out there. It's a very collaborative environment that we have here. So something to think about while you're trying to procrastinate from doing work or spending time with your family. keep us in mind.
Yeah. So let's talk about. Well, today we're gonna talk NFL for most of the day. We're gonna talk free agency. We're going to talk salary cap with our teams and, you know, maybe also touch on a little Jeremy Lin. And if we have time at the end, a little Celtics. We've been putting that off just with all the excitement with the Giants and Patriots. But, you know, there's plenty of time left in the season, and they'll certainly get their airtime on here. So, look, first thing I want to ask you about is a guy who has been a favorite play, you know, my favorite player for a long time. I know one of your favorite players for a long time also, and you actually had the pleasure of having him on your team. So I'm talking about Randy Moss, one of the most explosive NFL players of all time, took to Twitter this week on his birthday and announced that he's making his return to football, which, you know, to me is exciting. I know there's no chance he ends up with the Giants because that would be crazy considering what they usually do personnel-wise, but what I heard on ESPN radio that next morning was everyone was saying if he comes back, I wouldn't be surprised to see him with the Patriots. And that shocked me because I would be. What are your thoughts on him coming back and on whether or not you think he could end up back in a Patriots uniform?
First, I would just have to say I don't think he's going to be back with the Patriots. It didn't end very well for him in New England. It was a little bit... things got a little bit testy. He thought he deserved a contract extension, and the Patriots ended up trading him away to Minnesota. And then if you look at his exit from the NFL in general, Minnesota basically just released him, picked up by Tennessee, and he didn't even play much at all in Tennessee. They cut him at the end of the year. He just turned 35. I have great memories of him as a Patriot because he had one of the greatest years in the history of the game as a wide receiver playing with Brady. By all accounts, he was well loved by his teammates in New England. He was considered a great teammate, a great leader, got along great with Brady, got along great with the other guys on that, in that offense. But it's just hard for me to imagine that they would, you know, that they would go back, take a step back in that direction. if anything, they need to be looking to get younger at the wide receiver spot when you consider the fact that Ocho Cinco is going to be gone, in my opinion, most likely. Deion Branch is up there, 34 years old. He's a free agent. They may be looking to move on from him. I just don't see it happening. To be honest, I'm not sure if I see Moss catching on with any team around the league and having it be a success. You know, I could see that maybe there's a little bit left in the tank for this guy, because a lot of people thought he was done before he went back to New England, but that was, you know, we're talking 4 years ago. And I'm not sure that he has as much to prove as he did when he came to New England in 2007, really, after struggling with the Raiders there for a few years and being written off by most of the league. You know, coming back to New England in 2007 was a big deal for him and his career and his legacy. I just don't think that the Patriots are gonna go down that road again. And frankly, as a fan of Moss, I don't necessarily want to go through the disappointment that I think is going to be inevitable in this situation. Like, you know, when he left the first time, you know, that was bad enough because, you know, we had seen him play so well, and then things just went south quickly, very quickly. And that's kind of been the story with him throughout his career. He doesn't do well in situations where things aren't kind of lined up perfectly for him and the team he's playing on to succeed. So, you know, in that sense, maybe the Patriots would be a good fit on paper because they have a great quarterback, a good offense. They're going to win some games and have a chance to go deep into the playoffs. But they don't necessarily need Moss's talents, the way this team is structured. And if you look at what happened in their offense after Moss left 2 years ago or 1 year ago, whenever it was, their offense is at least as good, in a lot of ways better, more efficient. Brady's numbers were a little bit better after Moss left than they was, you know, at least during the end of his run in New England. Certainly 2007, when Moss catches 23 touchdowns, was just an absurd year statistically and production wise. But I don't think they need a Randy Moss on this team, given the makeup and the way that they, you know, their offense is so good, you know, without a guy who does or did what he used to do. I don't know if now either, if he's going to be able to stretch defenses and demand the kind of respect that he did before. And you always have to take into consideration the off the field issues and being unhappy with targets and catches and things of that nature. So I don't think it's going to happen in New England. And I'm a little bit worried that this Moss thing, you know, I always get nervous when guys that have had such great long careers start to pull these sort of shenanigans and like, I'm coming out of retirement, I'm not coming out of retirement. I don't want to mention Randy Moss and Brett Favre in the same breath, but I mean, he's certainly opening the door to that sort of comparison by doing this sort of stuff and, you know, shopping his services around, coming out of retirement. You know, I don't know. I just don't think it's going to be a good thing for Randy Moss fans.
Yeah. And it's hard, and you know, we've been a fan of him a long time, you know, before he was with the Patriots. And I'm sort of in this place now that I never thought I'd get to. And, you know, first of all, I would just say people who are debating whether or not he's going to be able to be effective, you know, I hear people talk about, is he going to be able to step on the field and help a team? And I would say, you know, first step is, if you want to know physically, it's really easy. You know, get a stopwatch and have him run. You know, I mean, that's what it's all about. How fast can he get down the field? Because if he can get down the field as quickly or close to as quickly as he used to be able to, then he's going to – I mean, that's what it's all about for him.
Right.
You know?
He can help you if he can still do that.
Exactly. Right. But, you know, it's – I used to defend him to – you know, I would spend hours arguing with people because people – you know, there's always been – you know, Moss haters out there. When he was in Minnesota, I would defend him. And especially when he was in Oakland, I would say, listen, that team is a freaking joke. And you don't understand how much better he makes you just by being out there lined up. And you know, I was a Moss apologist all the way. And, you know, now I'm starting to see – I was glad he was in New England because I said, finally, he's in a place where I know he can be successful. And then it was really strange the way he left. And, you know, people will say – he did nothing impressive that year, but that catch against Darrelle Revis still looms large in my mind, that one-handed catch. But then I think about, like, that press conference he did when Minnesota came to play New England. And he looked like a crazy person up there.
It was just bad,
man. You know?
And it was just a bad scene that last few months of his career.
Yeah, and I'm looking at this quote from Chris Carter yesterday, and, you know, admittedly, I'm not a big fan of guys throwing old teammates under the bus, so to speak. But, you know, they had – I don't know if you saw this, but they had Chris Carter, and he said, you know, it's not going to be a physical issue with him. He will be fine physically because he always is. He said the one thing you have to address, he called it the elephant in the room, he said, is that thing called quit. He said, not like any other superstar I've ever met. He said, no other superstar I've ever met has more quit in him than Randy Moss. And you know, I thought about it, and I've always said, you know, look, that's all crap. That's all. I mean, you know, the guy can get it done physically on the field like nobody else, and that's why you sign him, and everything else is just, you know, he was with very poorly run organizations for a long time. Yep. And I think, you know, we all, when our bosses – when we don't feel like our bosses are very capable, everybody gets frustrated. But yep. I thought about that, and I thought to myself, wait a second, Nick. I know you defend this guy all the time, but take a second and think about what just happened with your team. Think about when they were 7-7. Think about when they got blown out at New Orleans. Think about when they lost to the Redskins twice. Think about when everybody was calling for Tom Coughlin to be fired. Think about when, you know, it didn't look like they were going to make the playoffs. And it's hard, I think, for players sometimes to stay positive and not to give in to sort of all the baiting that the media is doing, and, you know, and not to give in to that negativity that's, you know, can grow very easily. And, I mean, I can only imagine what it would have been like had he been in that locker room. And so this is the first time in my life, I think, where I'm really starting to realize, okay, you know, all those things I used to say about how every team should want him, he can help anybody, it's not really true. There are a few situations here, I think. If he can still run, if he's still fast, I think a situation like New Orleans, if he's willing to go there on the cheap, I think he could really help them. I think that would be a good fit. I mean, really, that's the only one that jumps out to me.
Right.
Because that's the team where they're gonna win a lot of games. You know, they've got a smart
They throw the ball all over the place, right? You know, he does have a good quarterback, so.
Exactly. And you know, they spread the ball around, so it's not like he's ever going to feel like they're looking him off from one other player. It's just that that's how they work, and I could see him really getting into the city of New Orleans. So, I mean, besides them, I don't see a situation where this is going to work. And that's with the caveat that I really do think – physically, he could still be playing at a Pro Bowl level, but that's the only place where I see it working.
Right. You know, it's, you know, New England is the intriguing choice because of the success that he had there initially. His relationship with Josh McDaniels in 2007 was pretty good in that offense, and it was really when Bill O'Brien took over the play calls when things started to go south for Moss. And, you know, the criticism from Carter, yes, they sound harsh, but if you look at it objectively, you know, it's a pretty fair criticism for this guy throughout his career. And, you know, certainly towards the end in New England, there was a lot of instances where, you know, taking plays off became very evident. And the problem with a guy like that who other players respect so much is that his quitting can have quite a big effect in a locker room with younger players. And that's something I don't think you want to bring in to a team like New England, who's, you know, got some good young talent on that offense now with the tight ends. It just doesn't seem like it makes much sense. You know, now that being said, if he wants to come play for the veteran minimum, you know, maybe they give him another shot. I don't know. I just don't see it. And frankly, I don't really want to go through that again with him leaving, because it won't end well. You know, it won't end well. And, you know, New Orleans, maybe. But I don't think teams are going to touch this guy, given the way that things ended in Minnesota and in Tennessee. in his last few months and weeks in the NFL. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens. I'm following him on Twitter now, ever since I heard about this. Says he went to work out this morning, so, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, you can never rule out Dallas, I suppose, in a situation like this, but, you know, we'll be watching it. We'll be watching it very closely.
I'll tell you what, that would be really interesting for me because, and there are seemingly no limits for my affection for this guy. I mean, even we're talking, I don't want to bring this up again, but Super Bowl 42, he scores what, you know, seemed to everyone like the game winning touchdown. And, yeah, I was certainly upset. You know, my first reaction was I was swearing. I was upset. But I said, you know what? I'm just really happy that he's going to get a ring. And now all those people who have been doubting him will at least, you know, they'll have that to be up against. And, yep. You know, obviously the way it played out worked out better for me. I was happy the Giants won. But, yeah. My God, if he went to Dallas – That would
really test you.
Man, I would. My loyalty would be gone. I would have no choice but to. I would do a total 180. I would be rooting for him to just totally. Because, I mean, you know, that thing is always held together with duct tape. I would just be rooting for him to just totally tear it apart. I mean, God, he could put them in a position. It could take them years to recover from that.
Yep.
Anyways, so we'll see what happens. You know, it sounds like he's up this morning working hard just like we are. And it'll be interesting. But, you know, another story this week, guy, you know, I guess the opposite of the Randy Moss situation, a guy who we've got lots of questions about him physically, but in terms of his football mind and in terms of his competitive spirit and his mental toughness, could maybe help a team. You know, obviously we're talking about Peyton Manning. News this week that he has not had three neck surgeries in the last 2 years. He's actually had four, and that he was trying to sort of cover up this fourth procedure. You know, if he is cleared to play by other team doctors, then I guess maybe this isn't that concerning. But then the question is, why cover it up, right?
Right. And, you know, is this such a fascinating situation when you consider the fact that Manning is due $28 million on March 6th if he's still on the Colts roster as his current contract stands. The fact that the Colts have the number one pick in this year's draft and everybody is very high on Andrew Luck as being the next great franchise quarterback to come out of college. They have an older team who, if they're going to go with Luck, they're probably going to have to clean house a little bit and let some of those older free agents go. And we're talking about, you know, one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the NFL, one of the greatest quarterbacks of our generation of the last, you know, 15 years, certainly. And, you know, a guy who just a season ago had just signed one of the biggest contracts in the history of the game, if not the biggest. And, you know, and here we are in, you know, the middle of February, and everything is up in the air, you know, and this Colts franchise has really got some tough decisions to make. And Manning himself has got some tough decisions to make too. You know, it doesn't surprise me that he withheld the fourth surgery because, you know, there is a chance that Indianapolis could cut him and say, you know what, we can't afford to pay this guy.
I'd say it's likely.
It's you know, $28 million is going to really handicap them. And then you're going to draft Luck and you're going to have Manning making, you know, $15, $20 million a year. And you're going to have this guy who you're also going to have to invest some money in. Granted, it's not as much as, you know, Luck's contract would have been, you know, a few years ago before the lockout, before they restructured rookie contracts. But still, it doesn't seem manageable. And then, you know, what kind of team are you going to have in Indianapolis if you have both those guys there? You know, you're going to have to – you can't necessarily sell the whole team out and play to develop because you still have Peyton Manning. You're probably going to want to keep some of those older guys. And then how far does that set your team back when Manning eventually does move on? But so if you're Peyton Manning, you want people to think that you're healthy in the event that you're going to need to either if you're going to be cut and you need to go sign as a free agent with another team, or if, you know, and then thinking about how much money you're going to be able to get on the open market with all these issues with the neck. And it's sort of fascinating. I mean, the last couple of weeks, Jim Irsay, owner of the Colts, has said that he's met with Manning to discuss restructuring his contract. And, you know, I'm not sure what I would do. I mean, for $28 million roster bonus, you know, it's almost worth calling their bluff and waiting to see what they do, because they could always cut Manning and then re-sign him after that. But that's a lot of money on the line, and it's money, frankly, that the guy has earned. He basically built that franchise, that new stadium and everything, is just a result of the fact that they had one of the best players in the NFL on their team for the past 10 years.
No way.
I don't know what to do in this situation if I'm Indianapolis, and you know, there's just so many questions.
Yeah, no way that Indianapolis ever gets that Super Bowl without him.
No,
I mean, sorry, I should have been more specific. Obviously, they don't win a Super Bowl without him. I meant the fact that the Super
Bowl
was
hosting a Super Bowl.
Right. yeah, it's tough. I mean, you know, everything I've heard is that they were really hoping to not end up with this number one pick, because as much as Andrew Luck can be the guy you want to build around, you're right. This is an impossible decision. And
it really forces their hand here, right?
And the thing about it is, there's only one move. You know, it's not like he has a bad ankle. It's not like he's got bad knees. I mean, I was listening to, I think it was Bill Simmons had Mike Lombardi on, and he was saying that, according to people he's talked to, you know, that nerve is not regenerating yet, and he can't throw across his body. He has no velocity on the ball. I mean, you know, even if he is safe to play, you don't know. There's only one move. There's only one move. They were terrible this year. Reggie Wayne's a free agent. This is a good opportunity for them. You know, they've already cleaned house in terms of the coaches and the front office people.
Yep.
It would be one of those loyalty moves to try to still roll with Peyton Manning, and you just can't win that way in sports these days. I mean, their only move is to cut him, and then we're just going to have to see. Well, you know, I've heard lots of theories about what teams could really use him. You know, certainly I've heard Houston. I mean, yeah, he would make Houston the Super Bowl favorites, I would think, if he's able to play at the level we're used to seeing him playing. But that's a huge if. And, you know, I mean,
And the fact that Houston just signed Matt Schaub to starting quarterback money a year or two ago. They've got Mario Williams, who's a free agent right now. So if you go ahead and sign Manning, you could pretty much kiss Williams goodbye.
Right.
One of the best defensive ends in the game. And, you know, so that situation is tough. And it's just, you know, and you bring up a good point. For other teams who are looking to say, you know, is it worth the shot on this guy? I mean, you don't really know how healthy he's going to be, how, you know, how long he's going to be able to play. You know, is this going to be a thing where he takes a hit in week two and he's done for good? It's a really strange situation, and there's so many things are up in the air. I don't know. A lot, you know, teams that, you know, supposedly he was in Arizona meeting with Larry Fitzgerald. That's something that's been leaked out. Arizona, a team that just signed Kevin Cobb or made a deal for Kevin Cobb last year. I just find it hard to believe that a team who needs a quarterback is going to be willing to pay such a large amount of money for a guy who's really a huge question mark in terms of his physical condition right now. I mean, if you're a team like Miami or Washington or one of those teams, do you take a risk on a guy like this even? Is it worth it? Or is it too much of a risk?
Well, when you look at Washington, they're interesting because Dan Snyder, he's all about the splash. That's all he wants. And certainly that would be a splash. I mean, you could argue it's a safer one for him to really try to trade up for Robert Griffin. But, you know, I guess that's a situation you could see. I've heard Tennessee only because, you know, he's such a well-liked figure in Tennessee that could, you know, that could sway the Titans a little bit. But, I mean, they've got Jake Locker. Washington, it would be a much better move, I would think, for them to move up for RG3. You know, I guess, you know, we'll have to see what happens. I'm sure we'll have Peyton Manning pro days, just like they do with college scouts, and people will have to see how he throws the ball. And, you know, I guess at the end of it all, if this nerve doesn't improve, you know, he's probably going to end up retiring.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really – it's just such a crazy situation. And you think of the situation that the Colts are in. Would you ever have imagined a year or two ago that you'd be in a situation where you either have to cut Peyton Manning or trying to get him to renegotiate, because you can't trade the guy, you know, because of his contract and or the medical issues, right? So it's just a crazy, crazy situation. We should know here within a couple weeks with the March 6th deadline looming for that roster bonus. They're going to have to make the decision here within the next 2 weeks. So, I've been kind of fascinated by this whole thing. I hope that we haven't seen the last of Peyton Manning in the NFL, because he is such a great player. And even as a rival of the Patriots and the battles that they've had over the years, you know, you really – it's hard to have anything but respect for this guy, his competitiveness. He seems like he's a class act off the field. So it's hard to imagine that, you know, that this would be the end of Peyton Manning's career, you know, in such a bizarre and strange way. So I guess, you know, we'll have to just keep our eyes on things and see how it develops. But I mean, I can't imagine being a Colts fan right now. I don't know how you can decide which direction you want your franchise to go in this situation. But it's really strange.
It's, and again, I know it's hard for them because, I mean, you'd have to think, I'm trying to even think of, like, I guess our teams don't even have comparisons because, you know, I mean, you could say Paul Pierce with the Celtics, you could say Tom Brady, but.
Well, I mean, the only thing is sort of similar is that Drew Bledsoe in 2000, I believe, at the end of the season, had just signed the largest contract in the history of the NFL with the New England Patriots. Of course, he gets hurt 2000, 2001, and Brady comes in and takes his job, and they trade him to Buffalo the next year. And that was sort of a crazy situation where, you know, you've got a franchise player who, you know, you invest all this money in 1 year, and then the next year you're going in a totally different direction. But this is totally different because Manning's health and his, you know, his ability to play in the NFL anymore is so much up in the air. And because, you know, Manning is really one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the game.
Do you know who I've thought about a lot with this is Sterling Sharp.
Yeah.
Just remembering how good he was and then how his career was just all of a sudden done, you know?
Just over, you know, like kind of overnight. And was this a similar – his was a neck injury –
yep.
As well, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
Yes. I got home. I was kind of tired last night, so I just watched NFL Network, and they had the specials on all the.
Watching that too last night.
Dude,
Sharp Focus or whatever it was.
Isn't that good?
It was fascinating.
Oh my God.
Great stories. It's a really well done program.
Yeah, if you guys haven't seen that, check out NFL Network, NFL.com. All the specials are good. The Deion Sanders one is really good and all that. But the Sharp Focus one, Shannon Sharp, his road to the Hall of Fame is, you know, I think when you see him on the field and how sort of boisterous he was and how loud he is sort of in his commentary and stuff, it really shows this different hardworking, humble side of him that is, and just his story. It's really, I've seen it several times now. Whenever it's on, I watch it because it's really, really good.
It's fascinating. Yeah.
So let's transition here a little bit. We wanted to talk about, you know, the Patriots and Giants, their off seasons, and we're going to do it in several different shows. Today we were thinking about doing a little bit of the sort of free agent, what decisions need to be made. Obviously, we're going to be working towards the draft, but not today. Today, do you want to start? Do you want me to start? How do you want to do it?
Let's start with the Giants.
Okay.
We'll start with the winners of the Super Bowl. You know, their title run defense begins now. How do you see things shaping up with that roster? And are there going to be any big players leaving, any spots that going to leave big holes to fill on that roster? Any difficult decisions coming for the franchise?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, they're going to be in a similar situation to last year, which is that they're projected to be over the cap. And so they're going to have to let some guys go. They're going to have to restructure some deals in order to have any flexibility. Right now they're projected to be about $7.2 million over. And Brandon Jacobs, so I guess first let's just start with some big names who, you know, are not free agents but who may need to be looked at. So Brandon Jacobs is the one everyone's been talking about. He's due a $500,000 roster bonus in March. Not quite the one paid Manning's due, but still significant. I guess when you consider how much paid Manning's is and his production last year, Jacobs seems like a value.
I guess you could put it that way, yes.
So Jacobs is due $4.4 million next year. I think if they were under the cap, maybe that's something they're happy to pay because, you know, certainly Ahmad Bradshaw is this team's best running back. But he always misses time. He's got real bad foot and ankle issues every year. And he never plays a whole season. And so, you know, even if Jacobs is not the production machine that he used to be, and I think that's largely because the offensive line struggled so much. The guy, he can't get skinny in the hole. It's impossible. He needs a hole to get through before he can pick up steam. The production was down, but you need a guy who you know you can count on, even if it's just to put his head down, get a few yards, soften up the defense. The Giants do a lot of stuff out of play action, and the idea that they would go into this season with nobody who is proven and who we trust to be alongside Bradshaw for when he does go down is a little bit scary to me. Now, the good news is that he came out this week and said that he was doing a TNA wrestling appearance. About five of them have been doing wrestling appearances. He said that he wants to retire a Giant if possible. His family's in New York now. He wants to keep them there and that he'd be willing to restructure his deal. So, you know, the big question is, to what degree is he willing to restructure? Certainly 4.4 is not going to work for the Giants. If he's not willing to go down to about $2 million, I expect him to be gone.
Yeah, I don't, you know, we talked a bit about this last week over email. I think he's a totally replaceable part of that Giants offense. I didn't see anything very impressive. I mean, certainly in 2007, he looked like a different player. He looked like a more physically imposing running back, had a little bit more speed, was giving defenses a little bit more trouble than he is now. And I think the other running back that you guys have, Ware, is he in his first or second year?
Danny Ware.
Because he was on the
team when we won the Super Bowl in 2007.
Okay, so basically what my thought on a guy like Jacobs is, it's clear that Bradshaw is your number one back. You need more than one running back in the NFL today. That's just the way that the game is. But I don't see how they couldn't go out in free agency, pick up a guy like, I mean, look at a guy like Ben Jarvis Green Ellis from the Patriots, who people are saying is going to probably, could possibly command around $2 million on the open market. I mean, certainly I think he's as good of a deal for $2 million, much better deal than Jacobs is for $4 million. Even if they restructure his deal down to $2 million per year, I don't think they'd have a hard time filling his spot in the draft or in free agency with a guy if you're just looking to spell Bradshaw, if you're looking for a physical back. I mean, hell, Heinoski looked pretty good running the ball. I mean, why not just give that monstrous human being a few more handoffs, you know, to give Bradshaw a break. I guess it should be said, I'm just not a fan of Brandon Jacobs.
Now, I got to ask you this. Because this has been sort of a recent development, I think. Is it because of what he said about Giselle?
No, I mean, I just don't like I just get like a bad vibe from the guy. I think he's very cocky and arrogant. I don't think that, I don't think he's been that important to those Giants wins, the Giants Super Bowl wins. I don't think necessarily that he's been that important to them defeating the Patriots. You know, I feel like he's a little bit too cocky for the role that he plays on that team and his relative talent to other players in the NFL.
Yeah.
Okay. That's just a general sense. I mean, if we could ever beat the Giants, I might feel differently about it. But right. Since we continue to lose to you guys, he continues to bother me.
Gotcha.
A rational argument per se, but where I'm coming from with this.
some Patriots fans were very offended by what he said about Giselle, which he did apologize for. And certainly, look, should he have said that? No, but, you know, I don't know. She's got kind of a Yoko Ono vibe to me.
Interesting. That could be a research paper right there. To see.
Yeah, I mean, look, I do like him. I think even if you look at this stretch we went on this year, when Bradshaw was out and when we needed someone to step up, I mean, he had two really strong games against Dallas. He had a great game against the Jets. He even played well against New Orleans in a game where, you know, we weren't looking. I mean, when he is in a good way, I mean, he can still be really effective. And when there are holes there, when he can get north-south and get his legs going, I really do think there is something to be said for sort of the contrast between he and Bradshaw and his ability to – I mean, look, it's got to hurt to tackle that guy, right?
Right.
But, I agree with you. I mean, at $4.4 million, absolutely not.
No way.
And so I think, again, $2 million, I'm in. And if not, like you said, I think there's actually some pretty good free agents out there. I think you can look at the draft, certainly. You know, they've got some guys. You said DJ Ware. They've got Terrell Scott, who had, the fastest 40 time at the Combine last year. You know, they've got some guys.
Yep.
You know, but again, if it can work, I'd like it to work. He's been a big part of our team for, you know, for this whole sort of stretch. So that's the first big decision. Big decision number two is OCU Mignora, who, as we know, was really unhappy with the fact they didn't get a new deal before last season. And, you know, he was the good soldier about it, man. I mean, he, once the season started, we did not hear a peep about it from him. He just kept saying, you know what, I'm playing for my teammates. I'm just trying to soak this all in. I'm just trying to contribute in any way I can. And not only was he not getting a new deal, but he was certainly not being helped in excuse me, in earning a new deal because he wasn't even starting at defensive end. He was more of a role player. And certainly I think he ended up with 9.5 sacks or something in 9 games. So certainly he was very effective in that role.
Yep.
And, you know, now you look at it and it's kind of a tough – I think something has to happen. I don't think he's going to come back, play out this last year at $3.975 million, and that's going to be it. I think he either needs to be given a new deal, or he needs to be traded, or he needs to be let go. Something needs to happen. And, you know, Tuck was really banged up last year. He's having surgery. When you think about how much this team is built on the D-line, and you think Rocky Bernard is most likely going to be gone. He's a free agent. Yep. And certainly you've got Canty, and you've got Linville Joseph, and Marvin Austin, who we drafted last year, is going to be a guy who everyone expects to make an impact. But, you know, the ability to have Pierre Paul and then have Tuck inside and OC outside, you know, I guess I'm just torn because, don't get me wrong, having a guy like that is a luxury. A guy that you can march out there on passing downs, you know, he can just make things happen. He can force fumbles. He's getting sacks in key situations. It's a luxury, but, you know, is it a luxury they can afford right now? I'm not really sure. I think hopefully, you know, they've just won the Super Bowl. If he's, you know, he originally wanted a deal that would make him paid like one of the top 5 DNs in the league. That's just not realistic. He's the third best on our team. So,
right.
You know, I mean, that just, I don't think that's a realistic assessment anymore. I think even when you look at how fast he's able to get off the line, when you look at how effective he is in those pass rush situations, you have to remember also that he's got Jason Pierre-Paul on the other side of him. He's got Justin Tuck inside of him. you know, if he suddenly goes and he's playing for the Patriots, sorry, I know that's not even a fit because it's a 3-4, but you get what I'm saying. Right. A team that doesn't have another pass rusher, right, where they can pay a lot more attention to them, those numbers go way down. Those are inflated, yep, stats.
Absolutely.
So, I guess this is all going to be about where he's comfortable. I think the Giants will make him an offer that will hopefully, entice him to stay, but certainly they're not going to break the bank on him, and I think that's what he's looking for. So he could be gone too. The next big decision, and I don't think this one is as pressing as people are making it sound, but Victor Cruz was on New York radio. I don't know if it was – I want to say maybe 2 weeks ago, and he was asked about his contract. He's supposed to be making $490,000 this year. Yep. And he was clearly uncomfortable even answering the question. But he did say, I guess if you look at my production, I have outplayed my contract. I think I deserve to get paid more money. Now, my original reaction to that is, no, you don't. You did that for one season. Okay? Yep. And I side with the players a lot, but this is the one thing where I think good franchises don't jump the gun. And I always go back to Tommy Maddox with the Steelers. Everybody, yep, wanted Tommy Maddox to get a big deal with the Steelers, and they didn't give it to him, and that was one of the best things they ever did.
Probably saved their franchise, for 5 years. Yeah. Think of how crippling a deal like that could have been to them, to wrap up all that money in a player like that so soon.
Yeah, and Victor Cruz, look, the guy, you can't argue with the numbers. He had 82 catches this year, over 1,500 yards, 9 touchdowns, played big in the playoffs, scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl. I mean, the guy was consistently excellent. He got better as the year went on. And I do think he could be a great player for them. Now, I think what it ends up being is this. I think the Giants have two options. They need to look at it, and if they can get him locked up for value right now, then I think you do it, right? So, you're not going to pay him a deal right now where he'll be making what a guy who gets 1,500 yards receiving every year makes. But I think if you can lock him up for $5 million a year for the next 4 or 5 years, I think you do that. Then you're getting value on him, beyond what,
it's like you said, he did it for 1 year. Is it worth it to play out? I mean, you do have the risk of if him playing out his contract at whatever the rookie minimum or whatever that initial contract rate was, and then going and then becoming an unrestricted free agent and maybe commanding $7-9 million a season from some team. Besides from the Giants, or do you risk locking up 4 years and $5 million a season on a guy who's really, clearly the talent's there? I don't think anyone's disputing that. But as an organization looking that has to spend money on 53 guys, it seems to me like the thing to do would be to say, you know what, we're going to push this decision down the road. We're going to get him to play for us for $500,000 or whatever the number is next year. If at that point, or maybe halfway through the season, you want to sit down and say, okay, maybe now we'll renegotiate the deal with you. But I mean, right now his stock's pretty high, in terms of probably what he thinks he's worth, what his agent's going to think he's worth, what the rest of the league might think he's worth. It may not even be such a good time to negotiate that deal right now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I would – so I agree with you. First step is sit down, and I have a lot of faith in the Giants front office in terms of pure, talent evaluation. I think they must think highly of him for him to even be here. And certainly last year before he got hurt, I'm talking not the season we just had, the one before that. He did look very good in the preseason and then got hurt. And so I do think there's something there. I think they just need to say, okay, if we were paying you based on your production last year, like you said, you'd be getting $7-8 million a year. There's no way we're giving that to you. Let's just put it out there right now. So if you're talking like half that for a few years, sure, let's talk. If not, then you can play this year at $490,000. And I mean, he's been, you know, I do think you have a bit of an advantage with these guys who are undrafted. The team took a chance on him. You know, he's in New York City. I don't know. I mean, I guess what I mean is if they think he could duplicate or at least come close to that again next year and they can get him for half that value, then I think you got to do it. But, you know, they've got a lot. I mean, Manningham's coming off the books this year. Manningham's going to be gone, and we'll talk about that.
Because you didn't bring him up, you know, at all as one of the decisions. Well, so you're just completely saying that that's a foregone conclusion.
Oh, yeah. I was going to just talk about these three guys who are under contract right now and then move to the free agents. So, you know, that's the question with Cruz. But the other thing is that Nix has 2 years left on his deal, but he's supposed to be making $750,000 this year and $925,000 the year after. And obviously, if Nix continues to play the way he's been playing the last few years, he's going to command way more than that when that contract's up. So, yep. You know, they're getting huge value right now from this position where, you know, it's not going to be able to last. So they're going to have to make some tough decisions. Obviously, Nix is priority number. I don't care what anybody says. Hakeem Nix is the best receiver on that team, and it's not close. And so, you know, to me, that's the most important guy. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens. But anyways, those are the decisions to be made. If we talk about the free agents, I'm going to read off some of the important ones real fast. You've got Mario Manningham, Aaron Ross, Terrell Thomas, Kareem McKenzie, Steve Weatherford, Deion Grant, Dominic Hickson, Chase Blackburn. And then restricted free agent is Jake Ballard. And so I know you don't want to hear me talk about tight end injuries in the Super Bowl, but
nope.
Jake Ballard and Travis Beckham are two tight ends. Both went down with torn ACLs. Both are not going to be around at the start of the year next year. So we've got Bear Pascoe, and people are talking about maybe trying to pick up a free agent tight end or, you know, trying to draft one. And, you know, what I think will happen is the organization has been very big on this guy, Christian Hopkins. He's 26. He's been on the practice squad, but they really think that he could make an impact. And Jerry Reese always says when you have a hole to fill, you need to look at your own roster first and really be diligent and make sure you don't already have that person there. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's the direction they go. But look, Mario Manningham, and don't get me wrong, the guy 2 years ago, the guy had 900 receiving yards. This year he was hurt, but he started the year really well. And then in the playoffs, I mean, he caught a touchdown in all three playoff games before the Super Bowl. And then that catch he made in the Super Bowl might as well have been a touchdown. And so I think what you were just saying with Cruz is true in this case too. I think the stock on Manningham is really high. He seems to think he's the number one receiver. And I've heard, and you can weigh in on this as a fan of an opposing team that just played against him, but what I've heard on the radio whenever I get done with one of these games is not so much from the Falcons and the Packers, but certainly the Niners and the Patriots, is Mario Manningham would be our number one guy outside the numbers. And he's number three on that Giants team. That's the difference in the game. So what do you think about that?
I mean, I guess I agree with you as far as, you know, the relative abilities of Nix and Manningham. I think Hakeem Nix is a much more impact player. I think Manningham does well in an offense with two other very good to great wide receivers lining up out there with him. I don't know. I don't necessarily see Manningham as an outside wide receiver stretching the field in the same vein of like a Vincent Jackson or Randy Moss, you know. So I don't know. And if you look at the class of free agent wide receivers that are out there this year, a lot of guys, Marcus Colson's out there, a lot of big names, wide receivers. I'm not sure, you know, where he falls, you know, is the top five or six of those guys around the league. It's hard to say, right? Because, I mean, you know, it's is he more of a product of the fact that he's got a great quarterback and two other great wide receivers playing there with him? Or, you know, is he really that good? And I don't know. I mean, he would help the Patriots, I think, absolutely. They really need to get younger with You know, they're very strong in the slot and at the tight end position and running back position as far as catching passes goes. But they really, on the outside, they got nothing out of Ocho Cinco. Deion Branch is getting up there in age, and they need a guy on the outside number. So he would probably be the number one outside receiver for the Patriots. But if you're looking around the league and saying, is this guy, you know, is he going to really going to stretch the field? Is he really going to, you know, be playing up and down the sidelines like, you know, DeSean Jackson or somebody like that? I don't know. I don't know if, in my mind, I don't know if he's that kind of an impact wide receiver.
Yeah, no, and I don't think he is. And he's, you know, he's not that big. And that's, you know, I mean, when you're looking for a guy who's going to be your number one receiver, particularly outside the numbers, somebody who's going to be going for the deep ball, you'd much rather have a Vincent Jackson who's big and can really go up and get it. So, you know, to me, when I look at him, I don't think he's the number one receiver. I think the stock is really, really high right now. You know, would he be the number one deep threat for the Patriots or the 49ers? Yeah. But what does that mean?
Right. That's all relative, really.
You know? So to me, I picture somebody paying him more than he's worth. And in that case, I would say, you know, thank you. I mean, look, we got great value from him for the last few years. But even, you know, one thing he did in the Super Bowl, you'll notice, you remember the ball he caught out of bounds?
Yep.
This is what drives me crazy about him. And you can remember 2009. I mean, Christ, the guy caught 3 touchdown passes with a foot out of bounds against the Eagles. And that ended up costing us the season. I mean, this is a guy who has sort of frustrated me to no end because I feel like he just lacks that big playmaking ability. Now, certainly he made some big plays in that Super Bowl, but you could hear, I mean, you know, we've seen the sound effects now. I mean, Bill Belichick keeps saying to his team, make them go to Manningham. Make them go to Manningham. Take away Nixon Cruz. Make them go to Manningham.
And it took an absolutely perfectly executed throw and catch.
For it to happen.
They basically had the right defense called in that situation. There was not much of a window for that pass to be thrown. It was just an amazing play.
Right.
But it's not like they said, all right, Manningham, we're just going to send you deep. We're going to throw it up to you, and we know you're going to just come down with the ball because you're that much better than everybody else. You know, that's a different thing. There's a couple, you know, there's different kinds of receivers in the NFL. I mean, you have the guys like a Vincent Jackson or a Randy Moss in his prime who are big and fast and have the ability just simply by their size and skill to make plays even when they're covered. And to really take advantage of bad defensive players. Then you have guys like Welker and Cruz, and who are more possession receivers, whose real skill lies in their quickness, their smarts, their ability to get open, to find soft spots and zones, to beat men one-on-one in small spaces. And those guys are only effective when you have a really good quarterback who knows how to read defenses and can throw the ball accurately in tight windows. You know, if you take a guy like a Cruz or a Welker and you put him on another team, I don't think you can assume the same sort of success as you can when you have one of those big, fast, you know, wide receivers like a Larry Fitzgerald or somebody who can just beat people just by being on the field at the same time with them, you know. So it's different. I mean, so it's, you look at what is the relative value of a guy like a Manningham compared to a guy like, you know, Vincent Jackson, which just seems to be the name I keep coming back to because I see that as a big contrast in their styles of play.
Right.
If you're starting a team and you just have one threat, you want a guy like Vincent Jackson. You don't want a Mario Manningham or a Wes Welker where you're going to, you know, it's really more of a product of the offense as a whole as opposed to saying, you know what, we need a guy who can go out and catch, you know, 15 touchdowns this year and beat coverages just by being more physical or faster or stronger, whatever it might be.
Right. And so I think, you know, especially like I said, when you take into account the Giants are not in a great cap situation and they've got their other two receivers who are both going to be under $1 million each this year, Nick's under $1 million for the next 2 years. It's something they can't afford. And look, this is a great free agent wide receiver class. Like you said, we've got Vincent Jackson, we've got DeSean Jackson, we've got Marcus Colston, we've got Robert Meacham. There's a lot of guys who can really take the top off the defense. And so, you know, as those guys go, if guys, you know, if they're looking at the tape and they're seeing Manningham and they're sort of seeing some of the deficiencies that we're talking about, you know, maybe his stock comes back down. And, you know, if he ends up deciding he wants to come back to the Giants and give it another shot with this group and with Eli Manning, because obviously this is a situation where he can be successful, then that's great. But what I've heard, what the Giants insiders have been saying on Twitter, is that in his heart of hearts, he really believes he's the number one receiver, and he's not going to get a chance to show that in New York, and he wants to go out and get as much money as he can. And you know what? More power to him. He's
right.
You know, I mean, look, this is the thing with the Giants, the way the Giants do things. Guys are going to outperform their deals, and guys are going to end up going other places. And, you know, I can't think of any situations recently where I haven't felt like, okay, we got really good value from that guy. Thank you. You know, I mean, that's just what it is. And you know, they'll be fine. I mean, look, people were worried last year when Steve Smith left. I mean, look, Steve Smith had 11 catches. Victor Cruz had 82. People were worried when Kevin Boss left. Kevin Boss had 28 catches. Jake Ballard had 38. And Jake Ballard missed a lot of games. And, you know, they'll be fine. I think Dominic Hixon is a guy who's another free agent. If they're going to bring back a receiver from this group of free agents, Dominic Hixon, to me, is the one you bring back. He can get down the field just as well as Manningham can. He's just as fast as Manningham. To me, there's not a whole lot of a difference between those two. Other guys, I mean, you know, Aaron Ross and Terrell Thomas. Terrell Thomas was our leading tackler 2 years ago, one of our best corners, was ranked going into the season in the top 100 NFL players. And he obviously went out in the preseason. I think they'd like to have he and Aaron Ross back. I don't think there's going to be a big market for either Aaron Ross, just because I think he means more to the Giants than he does to other teams, just because he knows the system. Terrell Thomas, you know, coming off of a big knee injury, I don't think there's going to be a huge market. I think they want those guys for depth in the secondary. I think Corey Webster and Prince Mukamara will be your starters. Kareem McKenzie's going to be gone. That guy was a revolving door this year. Steve Weatherford, I promise, will be back. Deion Grant, they'll probably let go, or they'll bring him back for the veteran minimum. Chase Blackburn, God, I hope he's back. And then, you know, they've got, like I said, Ballard is a restricted free agent. Pasco is a free agent. And Beckham is not going to be ready to go at the beginning of the year. So it's hard to know what they'll do. I think they'll bring Hopkins up from the practice squad. I think they'll have to keep one of those guys. I think Ballard is probably the guy you want to keep because he's 6'7". But Bear Pasco showed he can make some plays too.
Yep. Not a bad second option. I believe. And Ballard is a restricted free agent, correct?
Restricted, right. So we can match. Right. You know,
right. You have the ability to match, or you'll be compensated for him if he goes. So that's not such a tough pill to swallow there.
And, I mean, this guy is like an aircraft carrier. He's not moving very quickly down the field. And, you know, this ACL injury, speaking of which, did it make you twinge a little bit in the Super Bowl? I don't know why, but when they showed him trying to run on the sidelines.
Yeah, and then he fell down and collapsed.
Something about that just made me hurt. I don't know. Anyways.
It was bad. It wasn't looking good.
So, you know, that's, again, Manningham will be gone. McKenzie will be gone. Grant will be gone. Wouldn't be surprised if Jacobs and OC are gone. But, again, like I said a few weeks ago after we beat San Francisco, I believe in the depth on this roster. I believe in what the Giants do. I can't, you know, the biggest offseason need is the offensive line. I think Deal will be a little bit better because he just had surgery and he had his hand was injured, and people are probably going to say, well, what does that even mean? But, you know, being able to get that first blow up into a defensive lineman.
I was going to say, it sounds pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah.
To me. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know. So offensive line is going to be the biggest need. But look, the Giants are going to go with who they think is the best player in the draft, regardless of need. You know, that's what they did when they drafted Jason Pierre-Paul, we had a ton of needs, and we took a defensive end, even though we had two of the best, and obviously that worked out for them. So I'm not counting on them to fill these holes. I do think there's some good offensive linemen. The guard from Georgia is really good. He should be there at 32. But, yeah, that's about all I got.
All right. So we covered a lot of ground then so far.
Yeah.
Boss Manning, Giants free agency.
Question for you here. We're about at an hour. So do you want to do the Patriots, or do we want to wait until next week and do the Patriots?
Why don't we do next week? Okay. How about that? Does that seem all right? Because I don't want to get into this and start dragging it out for another hour. I know our fans have lots of stuff to do. It is a Saturday morning, trying to be somewhat productive.
So
yeah, let's do that. We'll do the Patriots preview of free agency and roster moves next week.
But before we go, can we touch on Linsanity very quickly?
Yes, I believe that we could. I don't know, for listeners who don't know, I'm in a fantasy NBA basketball league with Nick. I usually don't do fantasy basketball because, much like fantasy baseball, it's just too many games. It's too confusing. I don't watch it the way that I watch football. For all those reasons, I don't usually do the thing. But I did get a team this year, and I did have named my team the Kardashian Effect because I decided that I would always keep either Lamar Odom or Chris Humphreys on the roster. This past week, I was able to pick up Jeremy Lin because of the rumors that Kim Kardashian wants to go on a double date with him and Carmelo Anthony and his wife. So the Kardashian Effect, Jeremy Lin, a huge story in the NBA. I mean, what are you making of all this? I don't know. That was kind of a tangent that I just went on there. That was not like a linear. Yeah, I don't know. All right. Well, what do you think about it? I mean, a good story, bad story, too much hype. Will he date Kim? Will they make a child?
Well, I live in Palo Alto, California right now. So this is the, you know, besides New York, this is the hub of Linsanity because this is where he went to high school. This is where he won the state championship with Palo Alto High School. Just last Friday, my wife was at a dinner for her job at Stanford, and she was talking to the father of the guy who was his backup in high school. And so, you know, people are very excited here. You know, I really don't think it's too much hype. I mean, certainly being in New York helps. And a lot of people have said, well, it's because he's Asian and we don't have a lot of Asian players. But I don't really believe that because the stats he had in his first four starts, nobody's ever put up those numbers before. I mean, nobody. And I get what people are saying. I've heard people say, well, if this was a black guy on the Bobcats, this would not be a very big story. And that's true. But I think it's more because it's the Knicks and not the Bobcats than it is because he's Asian and not black. Because if this were a black guy or a white guy who had been cut who had gone to Harvard, who had been cut by a whole bunch of teams, who just stepped in on the Knicks and just started dominating and the Knicks started winning, that would absolutely be a huge story regardless of race in New York, right?
Right. I mean, I do feel like race has something to do with it, the fact that he's Asian and there aren't really a lot of Asian players in the NBA. I think that heightens its mystique in a way because it is so different from what, you know, we're used to seeing in terms of the superstars in the NBA. The other thing is that if you look at the NBA in general, just the fact that you had a guy who was undrafted or from the D League now playing a starring role on a franchise, and winning games and playing so well against great competition, that just never happens in the NBA, right? There's no stars in the NBA that came out of nowhere. There's no undrafted free agents. There's no guys like in the NFL, like an Arian Foster, who was undrafted and comes out and leads the league in rushing, right? All these guys people have known about since they were 12 years old, playing in AAU and these like elite camps and getting sneaker deals. It never happens in the NBA where a guy comes out of, you know, out of obscurity, especially out of the Ivy League, which is certainly not recognized as a great NBA talent producing basketball conference. So all those things are part of it. You know, it's just the fact that he is an unknown, the fact that he is Asian playing in a sport that's completely dominated by black Americans. And, you know, so there's a lot of things going on, but I think it's a great I think it's a great story. If you watch the guy's game, he's got a great game. He's a smart player. He's distributing the ball. He's helping make his teammates better. He's making big shots. And to be honest, you know, the NBA really needed a story like this to help, you know, redraft the narrative of this season, which is so much for me, at least as a fan of the NBA, has been one of just completely mishandling this lockout deal, you know, really turning me off from the game quite a bit. They needed some sort of feel-good, exciting underdog story to kind of bring people's attention back to the game, get them watching again, get them thinking about, you know, other things besides, you know, the bickering between ownership and players and the contracts. And really the quality of the play hasn't been that great through the first quarter or half of season, whatever it might be.
Yeah, it's picking up, though.
It's picking up now, but, you know, it's really – it was a slow – rough start. You know, the players obviously looked pretty rusty. It is an interesting story. I mean, if I was this guy, you know, the last thing he needs to do right now is get involved with any part of the Kardashian family.
And that's where you're wrong, my friend, because you know that I'm a firm believer in the Kardashian effect. And you said, I believe just 2 weeks ago on this show, that you needed to see some more proof of it. And here it is. I'm going to tell you something, and it's gonna blow your mind a little bit, but I want you to stick with me.
Okay. All right, I'll give it a shot.
So at Cornell University, there is this psychology professor, Daryl Bem. Okay, and he has done these studies. I believe in the study it says he replicated it 9 times, where he has been able to show instances in which people who have had some kind of stimulus after an action were able to perform so as well as people.
This is a PG-13 show here. I don't know.
What I'm saying is if they are preconditioned with something and then they have to go perform that task, obviously they'll do well and they'll have recognition for the things they were preconditioned with, right? Like if I showed you a picture of – if I gave you words to study and then you went and took a test, you'd do better on the word you studied, for example.
Right. Okay.
And then when he had people perform a task and then they were conditioned afterwards, he was able to replicate it where they had those same positive results on the things they were conditioned with, even though they weren't conditioned until afterwards. Okay, so the idea being that time is not necessarily linear, that you can be conditioned after something and, you know, you can still show those results even though it happened before. Now, he was able to, you know, people have taken up arms about this. Some have said that his methodology is flawed. Certainly people have a hard time, mainly, I think, with that whole concept of time not being linear. But, you know, he replicated it multiple times and it at least warrants discussion. And the only reason I bring this up is this. Linsanity, I believe, is a direct result of the fact that it seems like Jeremy is about to go out on a date with Kim Kardashian. And in this case, I believe he is being conditioned for success by Kim after he has blown up. But I think...
In the future.
In the future. In the future. Okay? And it had to work this way because he needed to be in a position where he could take Kim home to his apartment, not take her home to his brother's couch, which is where he was living prior to this whole insanity thing.
Wow, man. When you put it like that, I don't know how anybody could argue with it. Just really, really blowing my mind. You're like you're like the Doc Brown of podcasts right now. You're defying the laws of space and time with this theory about Linsanity, the Kardashian effect. It all ties it together. My only concern is that if they do come together in an intimate way, will the universe collapse on itself?
No,
it is 2012.
Man.
It is 2012, man. Is this one of the signs of the Mayan apocalypse? Is this is this foretold on the walls of some tomb in Belize?
I will say this, man. Kim, and don't get me wrong, you know, I love Kim Kardashian, and I believe wholeheartedly in the Kardashian effect. it really seems like she is just sitting around at all times waiting for someone to become notable, and then she just pounces, you know?
Yeah. And she did the same thing with Tim Tebow, right?
Yep. And he
could you make the same argument that her talking about dating him somehow affected his performance in those 7 miraculous wins that the Broncos pulled off there?
You know, I think so. And I think that if he had been smart, I mean, you know, if he would have gone out on a date with her and actually engaged in coitus, you know, for all we know right now, we're sitting here this week talking about Denver Broncos Super Bowl champions.
Perhaps.
I think it's kind of like, you know, the butterfly effect, kind of like Hot Tub Time Machine. You know, if Jeremy Lin is smart, he will go on this date. And if he is smart, he will take – you know, I mean, if he's really smart, they will have regular sex and fun sex. and – perhaps even videotape it, and then, I mean, we could just be talking
about... Now you're
about...
just being greedy. That's your own. Now you're just throwing your own list of desires and demands into this whole theory. It's not fair.
There'd just be so many good names for that video. And now, or you could be talking about a whole entire resurgence of New York basketball.
It's possible, man. My verdict on the Kardashian effect is going to be out until I win the fantasy basketball league with my team name, the Kardashian Effect, my little avatar of Chris Humphries and Kim Kardashian with a red line in between them, and my pickup of Jeremy Lin. If it all comes together, then maybe I will truly buy into this whole space-time continuum thing, and we'll have to figure out how we can use it to our advantage to acquire chicken wings and Super Bowl championships
and stock options.
Just stock options.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think you have a pretty good shot, because even though I always persuade you and many others to play fantasy basketball with the promise that I will pay attention every day and I will make sure all
I noticed
too.
Your team is terrible.
Yeah. Well, that's because I haven't checked it since we drafted. So Derrick Rose has been playing every night, even though he's been hurt, and Dwayne Wade has been playing every night, even though he was hurt. And, you know, that's...
You got to get it together, man. You're almost 30 now. Come on.
All right. All right, man. Well, listen, I got a whole day ahead of me here. It's not even 9 a.m. here. So.
Yeah, I know. It's already Wednesday out here. So I've already worked 2 full business days. And in the time that we've done this podcast, so.
Hey, man, you know, it's all about the way you perceive time.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
You know, in my mind, we've already recorded next week's show. You have already given your assessment of the Patriots' offseason needs. And, you know, the Lynn Kardashian baby is already born. So. That's it. We better cut this thing off, man. This is starting
to get
it's getting
weird now.
Okay. Well, hey, have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks to all the listeners out there. Email us your ideas for names for the show. And tune in next week. We'll break down the Patriots. Maybe talk a little Celtics.
All right. Later, man.
Take it easy. Seems to me
they could get along without the rest of me, it wouldn't